Chandler Nova. And Rick, Debbie reports, and Rick comes in from his long weekend this Tuesday after supper, the 20th of March, 73. Channel 1 over, and the beginning of Debbie and Rick's report this Tuesday after supper, the 20th of March, 73. Channel 1 over, and beginning of Debbie's report, and with Rick this Tuesday after supper, 20th of March, 73.
I got one. I didn't take a box of matches. Are there some matches? Yeah. Oh, I've got some upstairs.
Yeah.
And that's what caused me all the grief. I've just roughed it out. That's all there, including the revelation.
All of it.
What?
That's chapter one. I've been
kind
of dreading that. I didn't know quite how to say it. And it's not clear enough to leave. I'll have to rough it out. Clear it out just a little bit before anybody gets into it.
Well,
this
feels good,
doesn't
it?
Right,
doesn't it?
It's
a little breezy in there.
Out there on the porch, I felt that was blowing in. That's right. Debbie, let me tell you, last night I wasn't all with us. I don't know what.
You're telling us.
Bring me up.
Well, first I got to give you back. This is a clean tape. That's that one you gave me the other day, yesterday, but there's nothing on that, so you use that again. I was going to put a little piece of Russell's tape on it, but I transcribed it instead. It was such a little bit to keep, so I transcribed it, so I can read it to you. Not quite as good as Russell, but I can try. She says, "I'd like to quit work around the 1st of August. I first thought I might be able to quit before that, maybe July, but I'm going to need money, and I don't know how my freelance is going to go. So I guess safely I won't work past the 1st of August, because I do feel that I need a month before school starts to get myself, I'd like to give myself a rest, because I'm not going to take a vacation before I quit. And what I was thinking was how of going home and see my family, because I'd like to go to camp meeting this year. I haven't been for 3 years, and it's very important for me to go back. I'm not sure I ever told you about it, because it's very hard to describe. It's another world that doesn't exist anymore. My grandmother's family has a family Methodist camp meeting in South Mississippi, where we all go. There are about 200 of us, for 10 days in August every year. Live in little cabins built in a semicircle, and every family or family cluster has its own cabin. There's about 40, and in the middle of the circle is a big open-air tabernacle with a sawdust floor and a big high-pitched roof where church revival services are held twice a day, morning service and evening service, along with prayer meetings and so forth. They get a Methodist minister. In the meantime, when we're not going to church, there's a creek nearby. One of my great uncles owns all the land around, and it's his creek. Cows wade in it and whatnot, and there's there's one part of it where it makes a big, deep pool where we all go swimming in the afternoon to cool off because it gets really hot. That night after church, we play volleyball, and in the daytime, we play cards, bridge or rook, or take naps, or just sit out under the trees and people talk. And it's so, I've always loved it. I've gone ever since I was a baby. And it's very tribal because the sense of family is very, very strong. There are people who can tell you who everybody there's great-great-grandfather was and how that person is related to you or me, even if they're 8 cousins 15 times removed. One of my great aunts can do that particularly well. And there are all kinds of people there, all ages. When I was growing up, there were always a lot of people my age, and we could run around and do things together, you know, go off on bicycles. People ride bicycles out there all the time. And up the hill from the grounds, there's a family cemetery where everyone is buried, and you can go up and wander around and look at all the old tombstones. It's really a pretty cemetery, and some of them are quite old. And there are these great big oak trees around, covered with Spanish moss. And the whole thing is its own utterly separate world, not like anything else anywhere else. And I love it for that. It's extremely hard to describe, harder still to give a sense of how you can throw yourself into a situation like that if you're not religious. But I manage, and it's wonderful, beautiful, and moving. But what I thought was, if you could, perhaps you could come up when I'm in Mississippi and come to camp meeting with me, and then we could go back to New York for a while. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, the trouble is, it is too long till August.
It's August. I have to wait.
You know, I didn't realize that, but everything used to go on in the month of August because that's when they laid by the crops.
Uh-huh.
They haven't gathered them yet. They've laid them by.
Oh, I see.
So they have their family reunions and the revivals, you see.
But isn't that something? Isn't that something? She never talked to me about it before.
You mean never brought it up?
Never brought it up. And she used to go every year. Every year.
Even when you knew her?
Sure, all through when she was in college, she just says it's the last 3 years she hasn't gone because she's been working in New York and she hadn't been free to go. She hadn't had the time. It's 2 weeks. It's 10 days. So she never had the time to go.
But you
that's
can
more like it.
But she, that's a world to her.
Well, let me tell you, Debbie, you can't take that in for yourself.
We go down there with a truck and 25 tape recorders and get the whole thing.
Well, at least we could get the morning and evening services.
Well, I told her I'd be there. She just better count on me, and she better not change her mind about going.
South Mississippi?
South Mississippi. Mm-hmm. That's her grandmother, that's the matriarch, you know, I told you about. I guess they all are ranchers around in Mississippi. They live about 2 hours from New Orleans in Hazelhurst.
Oh, gee.
So it's all around that bottom part of Mississippi. 200.
That's way down there, isn't it? Well, that makes it closer to here. How would you go?
I don't know, to New Orleans, I guess. Go from here to New Orleans and then go somehow from New Orleans or go to Mobile. Mobile's in Alabama. That's too far. Or not far enough. Mississippi's between Louisiana and Alabama, isn't it?
Well, you just go across from Pensacola, wouldn't you? Anyways, across the southern part of
it. Yeah.
Well, Pensacola is a long ways.
It really
Once
is.
You get to Pensacola, you're
halfway there.
Well,
I guess the thing to do is get to sort of head for New Orleans and then stop somewhere along the line. Jackson. That's where they always go in and out of Jackson. So I could go to Jackson, Mississippi.
Well, that's in the middle of the state.
That's
there.
The middle of the state.
Well, that she lives near Jackson. Hazelhurst is just south of Jackson. So, around there somewhere.
That's something to think about. Huh.
Well, now that's more like it, isn't it? You're getting a hold of these things now. Now, you can use that, you see. But I don't think you can make much of it. Well, a little help.
And I love the way she talked about it too.
Uh-huh.
It's really, really nice. You really see it, don't you? When she says you just swim in the pool when to cool off because it gets hot. And
right.
At night we play volleyball, and in the daytime we play cards or we take naps. So we just sit out under the trees and people talk.
I thought she was so allergic to her family down there. I just didn't.
This surprises me. It really surprises me. She is allergic to her family, but her background is very, very religious. You can see it in this. Her family are Methodist backbones.
I bet she could sit in here with us for a day or two, and she wouldn't be allergic to her family.
That might be.
Mm-hmm. Rick was allergic to his family.
Really,
next thing you know, he's going down there taking a look at his daddy. He'd never done it before. He'd just been so full of himself, you see. Couldn't see anything else. He was, and that education. Oh, he's conscious of that education.
Educated and all that.
Well,
you know. That's
something.
Do you hear what I hear?
Listen, talk about a hacking.
It's raining.
Hell, even through the door.
Well, I bet her mother can talk about cattle. She runs the cattle ranch, her mother does.
Yeah.
For her grandmother. Her grandmother owns the ranch. And her mother runs it because they're two daughters. And the grandmother is such a matriarch that she ran off both husbands. Well, she ran off Russell's father. And the other one is still there, but everybody thinks he's no count. So he just works down in Jackson in some county agent's office. And the women all run the ranch. Russell's mother runs the ranch. She's the foreman.
And Russell takes after the other women, does she?
Well,
she runs things too.
She runs things. Yeah, she's pretty sturdy.
She run you? Well. All right.
Well,
that's on the back of it.
That's just a transcription.
That'd be something to bring up.
That'd be something to go to. I told her she better start filling me in on everybody, on these tapes.
Yeah.
You know, I said you better just tell me a little bit about, you know, about your grandmother and your great aunt, and just fill me in a little bit so I'll know what I'm getting in for. Just tell
that's
me a little
right,
bit about them
right.
Before I go.
Let me tell you, Debbie, I don't believe she can do it. I think you will have to go rather ahead of time. I wish I had some place to go like that. Oh, would I go? I think by then I'll be sued.
I think you can run around a little bit yourself.
I'll just turn this over to somebody else and I'll go to Mississippi or somewhere.
Camp meeting, revival, two times a day, and prayer meeting too.
Yeah. Just so they're all there, that's all I care. That's what we used to have. We used to have family reunions and all this revival.
Yeah.
I've been missing things. What else? That's nice. That's nice.
That's nice.
Now you've been holding that back.
No, I just heard it yesterday.
Well, that's yesterday.
I just heard it yesterday.
Well, I hadn't heard it.
And you hadn't heard anything. You didn't hear last night. We'll never get that spontaneous again.
Well. My mind was a little foggy when I was trying to put it down this morning, and my mind was just cobwebby. Nothing much came out.
What is your mind? Cobwebby?
Well, it was cobwebby this morning. It really was. See, I went over, when I came back, Faye sort of said that Miss Mary and Marvin had been over on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And she sort of let me in on a few things they'd said, so I thought it would be a good idea to go over there and just hear their side of it. Sort of hear what they had to say.
Yeah.
So I drove over. Miss Mary came to the door. She's wearing, it was hot, so she had on a house coat that zippered up the front, you know, and pink, no sleeves, and these pink leather slippers with fur, pink fur all the way around.
Yeah. She got a house coat
Rick.
With a zipper?
Oh, yeah. It just zippers. It zippers to about... Zippers, well, she had it sort of about here, zippered. She kept pulling it up and pushing it down.
Park up here.
It is wet out there.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's Rick.
He got unloaded. You can't get in here. You get soaked. Are you hearing that?
It's just pouring.
It's just pouring. Where'd all this pouring come from? Go ahead. Let me tell you, Debbie, I have hardly any recollection at all what you said last night.
Well, so there she was. She was. She came to the door when I got out. I got out of the car and I said, "Well, hey, Miss Mary," and she's making rolls. Those rolls that I brought back. She was making rolls. She had this big mound of dough and she was squeezing them off the way she squeezed off the biscuits. She'd take the dough in her hand and she'd squeeze it up through her fingers and make a little ball and then roll out the biscuits. And she had this mound of dough. She filled up about six pans. Kept making it.
Oh.
And she said,
well, she stocked up.
Yeah, she was really making them a lot. And I said, well, what you making there? And she said, rolls. And I said, those aren't biscuits. No. She said, they're not biscuits. These have Irish potato in them.
That's what she had us guess.
Irish potato.
Uh-huh.
They have in them. Irish potato. And I said, well, how about that? And they rise. She says, oh, they've risen twice. She said. They got to riz once more. Three times, I says. Yeah, three times, she said. So we just sort of talking, you know, odds and ends and stuff. And we got company.
Yeah.
He did get it. Well, look what the rain brought in.
I brought you this. I have to bring it.
I think I brought it down from Gainesville.
Oh.
Yeah. It's coming from the south.
It's not?
Mm-mm. I ran into it coming up. Just about time I got to Gainesville, it started coming out.
Hmm.
Well, you just come from Gainesville.
Yeah. I dropped up some junk up there.
Rick, you're wet.
Yes.
You better drive off.
Well,
that's
about
a 2-inch run.
I told them and nobody in their right mind would come in there without you can park your car out of here or something. Ah, you got soaking.
Not bad. You got about that much water running around the shed.
Oh,
that hay
sure.
Floats on the top and looks nice and dry to you step out.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been doing this way for what?
Oh, some little time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, it's getting worse.
Started about.
Radio said you might have thunder showers.
What?
The radio said you might have thunder showers.
We took the cows over there, and it was about to sprinkle. After we got over there, it started sprinkling just at least a little bit.
That's right.
We stayed and it rained.
Mm-hmm.
It was cloudy. I left Miami this afternoon. It was a few clouds, and all the way up, it just picked up as it came. When I got near Nashville, it was solid. So something's moving down.
Hmm. So it's not coming up from the south. It's going down.
Huh.
Well, I was just out on the front porch, and the wind was in the south.
The rain's out of the north.
You just came in. You ought to know.
Well, sir.
Well, let me tell you, Rick, I have finally roughed out chapter one. And it just about killed me. And I tell you what, the one reason I couldn't do it was I had too much of this these flatheads.
Got rid of all of y'all and me.
Going off, yes. And I accomplished a little something. After got rid of y'all. But you know, I never saw anybody so slow. You know what? I kept dragging that out and dragging that out. It's just 15 pages. Of course, it's just roughed out there.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, I had to frame it all. You see, we'd already gone into that 1855 Leaves of Grass, but you see, I still hadn't fit it into anything. I had to fit it, you see. You got to fit it. oh God, those sequences is. I remember when I wrote at this station, that's the first awful sustained thing I ever did, and I've wished many times I never got into those things, and I'd done something else, been a preacher or something, and. You see, I had to get into it. You'd think I had the, like we were talking, but I couldn't just state that right straight forward right there all of a sudden and get into it. It just didn't work out that way. And my mind got more and more paralyzed as I stayed at it. You see. No exercise.
We didn't even talk to him, did we, David? Mm-mm. He was just like he wasn't even here.
No. Well, I'm trying to.
It's pleasant.
It'll take me a day to clear it up before anybody can read it. But now the next one. You see, number two is just trying this out, testing a piece of literature with experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the structure of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I want to get into Emerson and let it all hang on him, and I'll take my view of Emerson as against the one the biographers say. Won't that be nice? Won't that be nice? I don't know just. Now you see, in this, I'm going from my experience. This chapter one is my experience, you see, what we've done out here.
Mm-hmm.
And I carry that over into, I hang it on Whitman. And say, if it weren't for Whitman, and that view, you see, of the grass and the commonplace, mm-hmm. There is absolutely nothing in the present that would enable me to look at the countryside and stop up there where Mr. Gilbert was burning out that old tree where he had his clothesline and talk that clothesline talk. There's nothing in the present that would enable me to do that. I have to do it from Whitman.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one, you see, that gives me the view of the countryside that enables me to look at them and let them talk. You see, if it weren't for that, I wouldn't want to hear them talk.
Mm-hmm.
It'd just be trivial.
Mm-hmm.
But it's to me, you see, with Whitman in mind, it's not trivial. Now that's where I wind up. Except I bring in the revelation also.
I would think so.
I don't get out on a limb. you see, Charles Anderson brings it out very nicely. The way Emily Dickinson would step over and speak from the point of Lazarus beyond the grave and things like that. But she would always have a little strategy where she would talk as if it were Lazarus,
yeah.
Or some such way, and she says in that little poem about the Aurora Borealis,
yeah,
that she was struck, you see, with all those divine
mm-hmm.
promptings,
mm-hmm.
she would strut. But then in the next one, she says, my world is menagerie. So she's conscious of the strutting, such as Whitman does in part, except as I get into him this time, I see, you see, since we both have had revelations, I can see how he uses it, and he doesn't strut really, not to me. And I can also get into minor forms. I'm telling you, it's just natty. Except It's so hard on me. I just won't live to finish it. Not at that rate, the way my mind is slowing up. What are you waiting on?
I went over to see Miss Mary yesterday. Well, and I walked in and she was making those rolls, and I said, Miss Mary, those rolls? No, I said, Miss Mary, those biscuits. Rolls. She said, they're rolls. They riz 3 times. So,
it was for me to take the message.
Well, so I said, she said, come on in, get a chair, sit down. So I pulled up a chair. See, I sit on a chair in the kitchen when she's cooking. So I sat down for a little while, but I didn't stay down there too long.
Well, let me tell you, I lean on that stove.
Well, I didn't. Well, the stove was on. I can lean on it hot.
Well,
you, I sat down for a little while, and then and we just sort of talked about things. I said I'd come over to see her last week, and we'd left her a note, and then we'd come back, and she hadn't been there. And I said, where you been? You just never at home. And she said, oh, we've been just driving, taking care of our business, just driving, she said. And she said, we sold our land. We got our money. And I said, why, Miss Mary, that's just great. She finally got it, because when the first day I was over here, you were talking about it. And she said, yeah. Well, this wasn't on her mind at all, not at all. She stood over there in the corner, and all of a sudden, she's standing there making those rolls. She grabs the dough like this and squeezes it and makes a little ball to make the rolls and rolls up. She's standing over there, and all of a sudden, she throws her head right back like that and goes, "Ee!" I know something, she says. I know something. Well, I couldn't sit down for that. I got up and I went over and I stood in the door so I could look at her face while she was working. And I said, Miss Mary, what do you know? What do you know? And she says, you remember when Ms. Dodd called over there for Ricky? And I said, for Rick? Yeah, she called over there to get Ricky to come over and help. She said she had her cows in trouble. I said, oh, I don't rightly remember that. And she said, oh, yeah, and Mr. Miles went instead. She didn't need Mr. Miles, she says. I said, what do you mean, Miss Mary? She didn't need Mr. Miles, she said.
That's a damn thing.
You know who she wanted? I said, no, who? You, she says. Don't you know who got in their car and followed Mr. Miles all the way to the River Styx, she says. Don't you know who got in their car and followed him all the way to the River Styx? Then he got scared and turned around and came back here. He walked in the kitchen and he says to me, if you was me, would you go on over there? And Miss Mary says, I says to him, Virgil, if I wanted to go over there, I'd go over there. Now, he might kill you when you get there, but he won't eat you afterwards. She's killing herself laughing. She's dying. I've just never seen her laugh so hard. And, of course, I could hardly stand up. I was leaning in the door. I could hardly stand up. I said, oh, Miss Mary, I just don't know. I just don't know what to do. And she said, well, she said, I tell you what. She said, I tell you, I just think that you just ought to watch out. There is something wrong with a man what goes to bed in the summer and don't get up again until the winter. She said, there is something wrong there. And I said, well, yeah, that's right, Miss Mary, I guess so. She said, and another thing, And another thing, he says he's going to take you hunting. And I said, hunting? And she says, and I said to him, Virgil, it ain't hunting she's interested in, it's fishing. Didn't she come over there to see you rack the bait?
Oh, no.
And so he says to me, well, if she wants to go fishing, it sure can be arranged. And Miss Mary says, well, only if you take me along. And she says, and Virgil said, why, sure. Why, sure.
But he's not over there yet. Oh, no, that's where you got there.
Yeah, she's talking about when he's talking to her.
Oh, that's when he went to the River Styx.
He went to the River Styx and came back and sat there and talked to her.
Lost his nerve.
Yeah, he lost his nerve at the River Styx and didn't follow you. So, Miss Mary, I said to Miss Mary, now, you know, Miss Mary, I said, I'm just pretty busy, and we pretty busy all the time at the ranch, but I sure would like to go fishing with you, I says. I sure would like to go down the river and fish with you. Well, she picked that right up. She said, oh, yes, she said, that'd be a good idea. We'll just go fishing together sometime. I said, well, I want to. I just want to go down the river with you. And so she said, well, we're going to put these rolls in, and she had put them in the oven to rise, and we went and sat down, and we just talked about different things. She told me she was going to church that night. They were having a revival service, and she was going to go. And we just sort of talked and had a glass of water, and then all of a sudden there was this noise at the back door. And Miss Mary jumps up, and she says, Marvin, Marvin, she says, quick, get in the truck and go over to the Virgils. Guess who's here? So Marvin comes in laughing, and he just sort of stands in the door, you know, the way he laughs. And I said, Miss Mary, you're supposed to be protecting me. You're not supposed to be sending Marvin over to get him. And she just laughed. And she said, yeah, that's right. We'll protect you. And then she looks over at me and she says, you know, we're just teasing you. I know that. So we went and sat down. And Marvin looks over at me and he gets real serious and looks at me. Yeah. You know, he says,
yeah.
There's some things that people ought to know.
I've never seen him.
He was so serious, and I said, what, Marvin? What are you trying to tell me? There's some things that people ought to know.
I never heard him talk.
Serious, and he says, when he goes out there hunting and takes a gun and a light and gets out there and hunts coon and rabbit, that's illegal, he said. That is illegal, and if you is out there with him, you is an accomplice, he said. There is some things folks ought to know, he said. I said, Marvin, I'm glad to know that. I'll just be really careful I don't go out there with any light and gun with him. I said, I sure appreciate your telling me that, Marvin, I said.
Well, the word would get around fast, wouldn't it?
So anyway, Marvin says, well, he had to get on back out there to water the collards. He'd been working out in the garden. He'd just come in for a minute, so he said he thought he'd go on out. And so he went out, and Miss Mary and I, the rolls got done, so Miss Mary took them out, and we sat there and ate a roll together. And we talked a little bit more, you know, and then all of a sudden...
About just that and the other?
Just odds and ends, sort of. We didn't really talk about too much. I don't quite remember too much what it was, just odds and ends. I was talking to her about that Prolic. That my friends couldn't get their cows to use it. And yes.
What did she say about that?
She said their cows learned right away. I had talked to these people this weekend. They had cows and they got a Prolic, and they couldn't get. They took them 2 weeks to teach their cows how to use it.
Mm.
I don't know what was wrong with their cows, but they had to take hay and rub it on the wheels and get molasses on the hay and then feed it to the cows and lead the cows over and do this for 2 weeks until the cows learned how to use it. So she said that it took their cows a couple of days, and some of them just looked like they was born knowing how to do it.
Yeah.
And she said, we go down there to the lake, and we have a big bull down there, and he just covered with it all the time. He gets it on his chin, and he flings his head like this. She says, I don't know why those little cows don't just eat him up. She's covered with it all over his side. Yeah. So we're sitting there having a biscuit.
Well, now that's nice, Debbie. You see, that kind of a strategy. You got that. you got that in your satchel, you see, to bring out. She can handle that. That was over at the Cars.
Yeah, Archie Carr.
Archie Carr. They were over at Archie Carr's.
No, Archie Carr was over at our house. And we just talked about cows. That's all. So we're sitting there having a biscuit. And all of a sudden there's this rattling out in the lane. And I look out there and there's this truck coming up the lane. And I says, "Miss Mary, who is that?" And I just, like, my stomach turned over because I knew who it was. Before she whips her head around like this, she says, "Why, that ain't nobody but Virgil Bachknight." She said, I said, "Miss Mary, what am I going to do?" She says, "Just act normal. Just act normal. Just act like you don't know nothing's going on. Just act normal." She was having the best time. Oh, and before that, when we were first talking about it, when she was saying that he'd gone to the River Styx, she kept saying, "He just got it bad." She says, "He just got it bad. Oh." And then when she told me about him going to sleep for the summer and not getting up until winter, she said, "Now don't you never tell this on me. Don't you never tell this on me," she says, "because I promised him I wouldn't say nothing but good things." So sure enough, it's Virgil in the truck. And Miss Mary gets up, and I'm sitting there twiddling my thumbs. I was ready to run out the front door when he came in the back. And Miss Mary goes over, just sort of sashays right over to the door and opens it. And in comes this little blonde boy with curly blonde hair. Looks a little bit like Marvin. Turns out it's Marvin's nephew. And right behind him comes Virgil. But this is a new Virgil. This is a transformed Virgil. This is Virgil with khaki Bermuda shorts, bright red socks, a clean white t-shirt that doesn't quite make it over his stomach. It just misses his belt by about a fraction of an inch.
Just a fraction?
Oh, just that much. Half an inch. It misses his shorts. And he walks in the kitchen door, and the entire room is filled with the smell of Vitalis hair tonic. It's just overwhelming. He's just a walking daisy. His hair is all slicked back like this, and then it's up in a little ducktail in the back. You know how used to wear ducktails?
Ducktails.
It's soaking wet and up in a little ducktail. Up in a little ducktail in the back.
I don't understand that.
Well, it's just a lot of hair tonic on it.
It would just come down to a little point.
Just comes down. It just comes down and flips up like that. You pull it all back, and then you just flip it like that. And khaki shorts and red socks and this t-shirt. Transformed.
Red socks. Knee socks?
No, they weren't knee socks. They were just bright red socks. Came about halfway up his foot. I mean, up his, up over his ankle.
As she told me the other day, he wore socks up to his knees. Yeah.
Well, these weren't up to his knees, but they were bright red. Well, he walks in. "Hey," he says. "Hey," I says. So he and Marvin's cousin sit down, and Miss Mary is just having the time of her life. I've never seen her enjoy herself so much, because she's got all of us on the string, She's sitting up there at the head of the table running everybody, just manipulating the whole thing. Well, first off, she starts baiting Virgil. She says, "Her and me just sitting here planning us a little old fishing trip down on the river." She says, Virgil's at the other end of the table, and he sort of sits up. "Oh," he says, "I never been on the river fishing," he says. So Miss Mary, she's just enjoying this so much, she just can hardly keep herself from laughing, Oh, and one other thing. Just before Virgil came in, she grabbed the rolls. She was going to hide them. She says, "I don't want these on the table. They'll eat them all." Like Shirley Dodd talking about how much Virgil eats. Well, she didn't get him off the table fast enough. So her nephew says, "What are these?" He says, "What are these?" She says, "Oh, just some rolls." She says, "Go on, have one if you want." He says, "No, I don't think I want one." Virgil's arm just kind of comes down the table. "I'll have one," he says. And he just kind of pulls play it up to him, and just they start disappearing, you know, he just starts feeding himself. Oh, another thing he has, he's got this cigar about 6 inches long in his mouth, and he's chewing.
Oh, no.
Keeps going out, and he keeps relighting it. So we're sitting there. Well, so Miss Mary brings up church.
You mean he ate those rolls?
He ate rolls and smoked the cigar all at the same time.
And smelled of Vitalis' hair.
And smelled of Vitalis' and had on red socks.
Well, that color.
Well, that is. And so...
That's lively. He's full of life. Vigor, isn't he?
Well, I wouldn't know if he how much vigor he's got. He goes to bed for 6 months of the year. Well, so, Miss Mary brings up church, because they're all going to church. Well, it transpires, turns out that this nephew is a preacher. He looked like he was about 14 years old to me. He had just this baby face, but he must be a little bit older than that if he's preaching. I don't know. He looks like Marvin. He's got those high, wide cheekbones like Marvin.
An Indian.
Yeah, he looks a little... Marvin's, you know, face comes up here.
Indian.
Except he's blonde. He's got blonde, curly hair. So anyway, Virgil says, oh, he preaches, he says to me. Oh, I said.
Oh, Virgil said that.
Oh, yes. Virgil was right in there with me talking, you know. And and he says, in the last line of his last sermon, I'll always remember that. And I said, oh. He says, you want to know what it is? I said, sure. He said, no matter how bad the vase is broke, it can always be mended. He talking about the potter in the Bible, you know. And I said, oh, the potter. Oh, yeah. Well, so then Miss Mary gets into this real theological discussion with these two men. She's just carrying on. And it was the first time I ever saw her ask questions and listen to the response. She really discussed with them.
Oh,
she really asked questions and really listened to what they said for an answer. She says to Virgil, now I want you to explain to me, she says, I want to know, this has always bothered me, why they say, and the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. How come they to say that? And Virgil sits down on the other end of the table, and he kind of shifts around a little bit, and he lights his cigar again, puts it on either side of his mouth, and says, he says, I just never did understand that one. So then, in the middle of this, Miss Mary throws something my way. I have not been taking part in this discussion at all. I've just been listening. I haven't said two words other than to when Virgil directs something at me, I answer him. But Miss Mary looks over at me and she says, oh, Debbie, she says, get up and go in the bedroom and lift up the sheet on my bed. So I immediately leap up. Crosses my mind to keep going out the front door, but I decided I couldn't. And I go in the bedroom and I lift up the sheet.
Why, you're having too good of a time.
Like hell.
Well,
Miss Mary was. I lift up the corner of the sheet and it's this brand new mattress, spanking white mattress with big green flowers on it. So I just holler from the bedroom. I say, Miss Mary, looks like you're growing a garden in here. And she's just tickled pink. And I walk back in and she's just laughing away. She said, that's my birthday present. She says, that's my birthday present. I said, well, I thought the ad machine was your birthday present. Oh, no, she said, the mattress is too and a watch too. And I said, well, Miss Mary, if you keep on having birthdays, you're going to be bankrupt. Well, then we went back to the religious discussion.
But just in the middle of it, that's
just in the middle. She threw this in, just in the middle, sort of to keep me. You see, she's manipulating all of us. She's the one that was holding all of us on the string.
Oh.
She was sitting down there just, you know, sort of, she'd shake the line at each one of us, and we'd jump, you know. And meanwhile, this cousin is sitting over, I mean, nephew, sitting across from me, and he's just kind of looking at me like this, you know, like, like I was exhibit number A or something. Miss Mary's taking all this in too. So then she starts throwing out things about she wanted to know, she said to the nephew, she says, Now, I want to know whether Jesus went to hell when he got put in the grave. And the nephew says, well, that's easy to explain. He says, there is two kinds of death. There is a spiritual death, and there is a non-spiritual death. And Miss Mary just looks at him, and she says, oh, she says, oh.
She ran a long way.
She didn't say anything at all. And then he says, and did you know, he says, that Jesus had full brothers and sisters? And Miss Mary said, no, he did not. Ain't you read the Bible? Ain't you read the Bible? Don't you know Mary was not married before? And Joseph knew her not. Those were not full brothers and sisters. They was half brothers and sisters. That movie, The Ten Commandments, and I said, and he said it to all of us, and Miss Mary said, no, she hadn't seen that movie, and Virgil said, well, that was a wonderful movie. They read all those things, and made that movie, and that was a wonderful movie. And he said, do you know, they never found Moses' grave. They never found it. Miss Mary said, I know, and you know what? They never found Mary's grave either. How come they never just say it in the Bible? What happened to the mother of Jesus? All we know is that Jesus said, look after my mother, and that's the last thing we know. She said, we never know what she did after that. We never know where she went. We never know when she died or how she was buried. How come they didn't do that? And we never got around to the answer of this, because at this point, Marvin walked in, and he came in behind. I was sitting just like this on the end of the chair. I mean, I was just sort of perched like this, ready to go at a moment's notice. Marvin walks in behind me, and he just stood there for a minute. He just sort of took it all in. So he's standing behind me, so he can see that I'm on the edge of my chair, ready to go. And there's Virgil, and there's his nephew, and there's Miss Mary having the time of her life. And he just sort of sits there and takes it all in, you know. Sort of looks around, and he doesn't sit down. He walks over around and sort of leans against the wall on the other side of his nephew and just sort of stands there for a minute. And they're talking about heaven and what happens when that everybody will know everybody in heaven. And he says yes. And he, to his nephew, he says yes. And we'll all be brothers then. And you won't know me as Uncle Marvin. I'll be Brother Marvin. And his nephew says, yeah, that's right. And then Marvin sort of looks out the window and he says, you know, you just got to do things when it's time to do them, he says. It was time for me to go out there and water that garden, and you just have to do things when it's time to do them, he says. Well, Miss Mary picks it up, and she says, why, I bet Mr. Miles is wondering what happened to you, she says. She looks over at me. I bet he's wondering what happened to you. And I says, oh, yes, it sure is time. So I just sort of leap up, and Miss Mary leaps up too, and she says, now you got to take these rolls along. And I said, oh, I couldn't do that, but I don't stop to fight with her about them. I just take them. And she comes right along after me, and we get to the door, the kitchen door, and she opens the door and gets behind it with me, you know, so that we're both behind the door and they can't see us in the dining room. And she's just dying. She's grinning like this, and she starts chewing on the side of her mouth so she won't laugh. Her eyes are just sparkling. And I said, well, Miss Mary, I sure do appreciate these rolls. I said, and she just reaches out and she grabs my hand and just squeezes it like this. And she says, hurry on back, man. I think I left the yard at about 50 miles an hour.
You didn't want me falling to the river Styx? Did you look behind?
They kept him there.
David.
So it's never ending. I tell you, Miss Mary never had such a good time.
Well, I'll tell you, that Friday, Rick, we were just about ready to sit down and eat a bite, and then Faye was going in, and Debbie was going over to talk to Miss Neela. Aunt Shirley called. I was sitting there. I said, tell her I'm out of the old pen. And she told Faye that she was having trouble with her cows and she couldn't get Marvin or anybody. And who did she ask for, Faye?
You know, I try to think back on that. I don't believe she asked for anybody. But it was obvious, as I think about it now, that she didn't mean for you to come. Because she said she had, she'd been trying to get Marvin. She had an emergency over there with the cattle. And I said, well, now, Guy is, I believe she did ask for you. Is Mr. Miles there? I'm not sure. But anyway, she said, oh, don't tell him to come about that. And I said, well, I think I can catch him if it's an emergency.
Miss Mary says she didn't need no help with them cows. Miss Mary says she didn't need no help with them cows. Oh.
Well, I got over there. And they had planted millet. It was right there with that little pond of a thing. Cows were out of the rye, and seemingly went down to get some water, and instead of that, they weren't in the cross fence there. But if they could keep them out of the millet, it was just coming up. But they weren't out in it. There wasn't any use for them to go out in it. There wasn't anything to eat. They could just look around a little bit. And they were lined up along the fence and under some trees out there, and that's where it was. And Shirley said that she had been trying to get them out all morning. That something had gone wrong over there. The gate had swung open or something, and they came out. And I thought to myself, that's something new. That your cows won't follow you around, you see. They'll just follow her around. All she got to do is say, come on, come on. They'll go with her. Well, I said, they're in trouble while I'm here. We just go over and get them out. Oh, no, she says, I think they'll be all right now since I
talked about it. Why, God?
So we stood and looked at those cows there. Under the shade trees.
It's the first time I've known that.
Oh.
That's what it was. And she said she was going to get Marvin and put a cross fence there the first thing. And I wanted to get back over here. I wanted to eat a little bite and there's several things I wanted to speak to you about before you left. And she says, we'll just go to the house and have a cup of coffee. And she was right insistent on it. I guess she didn't want Virgil to light out after me or something like that, you see. But I wasn't in on that. So I retraced my steps. And Miss Mary says, when she came over here Sunday night, we had a big report on that Sunday night, you see. She brought it up several times. It just goes all through that talk, that tape. The talk sound, that's what happens. The talk sounded sort of slow, pokey, but on the tape, it's just live as it can be.
Every once in a while, she'd say.
And you see it on the tape. Mm-hmm. She's trying to get that going. And out there in the car, it was way past dark. And we were taking this, just like the cows over here now.
Mm-hmm.
Golly, don't forget. We were taking the cows down, and here come that car with the headlights on. And I said to Faye, good God Almighty, let's just keep on going to the back pasture.
Because he was working on it.
Well, we came back up here, and here was the truck. And as Miss Mary and Marvin. No, she said, they just couldn't get out. Well, you see, you couldn't have kept them in there.
and it's after dark.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's way later.
Eight.
Why they came in here and they were about to leave before they sat down, you know? Why they stayed? They stayed all evening.
And every once in a while she'd say, "His dad didn't need for you to come. We were just as."
Oh, to start with, I was slow. I didn't figure this at all. No. I just passed on. She had a hard time bringing it up, like it was.
This time I had not anything to make me think it was anything else, because Shelley had called and I thought there was an, and I didn't know if he died, if there wasn't an emergency.
Now that's a curious thing. I think the most one of the most interesting things we got was that roof business, the Sears men putting on the roof. That went on for several months. They tried to get everybody. Then after the Sears men proposed to do it, it still took them a month or two to get there. And then after they put it on, it was such a shabby job. Boy, it really looked awful with the trimming and all around. And that went on for such a long time. And Suzanne was over there the day that she confronted the Sears man, and she was really going to eat him up. And she just melted, Suzanne said, when she got back in the kitchen, and just stood there and tears rolled. She couldn't make it. She wasn't hard-boiled at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sears men left, and they went into the other room and sat down, and all at once she picked up a little cue from Suzanne about, I forget the cue, but it brought up that idea of the Ford runabout with a rumble seat. Back when she was hauling the young people around and going courting, and Marvin was one of them.
That's what she was talking about over here.
Yes, and apparently this was in the 70s. This was the first time that she's ever noticed him. And she ordered him out of that. And said she wasn't going to take him nowhere. I can't give it to you straight. And she was a different person. The sun began to shine when she thought of that. Just like that. Suzanne reports it. That night, that afternoon, she came back with Suzanne.
Yeah, she came over here.
And had lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat there for an hour or more talking about that rule. Whole different attitude, and it's all down. It's just beautiful. It is beautiful as it can be. Over here, she was carefree and in control. Just pushing that ahead.
But Sunday night, she was just like she was with you. She was sitting right there, and her laughter was just uncontrollable. She thought Virgil chasing Guy all the way to the River Styx, getting faint-hearted.
Marvin sitting there, "Some things the folks ought to know," he said.
And over here, he said.
Well, now, that's a long ways off. You talking about cattle with the cars?
Yeah, I just brought them up. I brought up the cows out here to talk about them a little bit. And I mentioned that little bull calf of yours. is they said they wanted some calves. They wanted to buy about 8 or 10 calves because they had 25 acres of pasture, and they didn't have very many cows on it. So Archie Carr said he thought they'd get some calves and, you know, fill up the pasture a little bit. It's so funny. Here are these two biologists. You know who Archie Carr is?
Heard of him.
He works with green sea turtles down in the Galapagos Islands, and he's written 5 or 6 books about it. And they go down there and they tag the sea turtles and follow their migratory patterns all over the world. And his wife, Margie Carr, runs the ecology agency that my mother works for, and they're having their annual meeting in a week. And so they've really been working hard. And they came home, Mother and Margie came home from the office on Friday night and announced we were all going out to dinner. First we were going to have a drink, and then we were all going out to dinner because they'd had it. And then they had to go back and finish stuffing 40 more envelopes or something for this meeting. But so Archie Carr came out too, and I'd never met him before. He's just a charming man. But what I thought was so funny was here are these two biologists. She's a biologist too. And they have these cows, and then what they have, Margie Carr says, we have a cow family. She says, we've never separated the cows from the calves.
Oh.
And Archie Carr says, now Guy Miles, I bet Guy Miles knows how to work with cattle. He says, I bet he separates the calves, doesn't he? And I said, yeah, he usually does. And then he goes on to say, oh yeah, they had to train the cows to use the Prolic. And so my father says, why, you don't kill those cows, do you? Archie Carr says, there's just one we had to kill. We had to do him in. It was an old steer we had. We didn't have any fence on the place that would hold him. We'd try to put him in one pasture, and he'd jump right over the fence and go into the next pasture. We tried to put him in a truck and haul him off, and he jumped right over the side of the truck and kept going. He said, finally, the worst part was one day he taught our bull how to jump fences, and he took our bull gallivanting with him. Now, the only trouble was that our bull wasn't a steer, and where they ended up was in the Richardson's pasture with 52-year-old heifers that hadn't been bred yet. He said, the only trouble was they were Black Angus and my bull's a Hereford. Never met the Richardson. He says, people don't understand. He says, I've told this story and people just don't understand. They say, well, they're purebreds, aren't they? He said, purebreds, hell, it's like breeding a Great Dane to a dachshund. Oh, dear, they have a lot of woods. Had a lake, I guess, sort of a swamp. They live over here in Micanopy, and Margie was telling this story about about this alligator that they have in the lake, and this alligator was sort of their standard exhibit. Whenever anybody came down to Florida, they'd take them out to see this alligator, and the alligator would always put on a show. It would open its mouth like this, you know, and clap its mouth shut, and sort of run around and slash its tail, and everybody would think, oh, isn't this exciting? Look at this. It's a live Florida alligator. And she said, oh, Archie and I just sort of always thought he was a pet, and he was just doing this because he knew we wanted him to. She said, well, one day Archie decided that he'd go out and take some pictures of this alligator opening his mouth and flinging his tail around. He just thought he'd have a few pictures of it for the family memory book. So Archie went out with his camera, and the alligator charged him. And Archie ended up in the top of a tree, waving his camera, and the alligator was down at the bottom, walking round and round. She said Archie stayed up there, and he kept watching that alligator, and he said, finally, the alligator got back from the tree a little bit, and Archie figured, well, this was his chance, but he knew he couldn't take the camera. He had to shinny down the tree too fast. So he hung the camera in the tree, and he went zipping down the tree and off like that, left the alligator out there. And she said, I got home, and Archie said, come here, I have something to show you. And she said, well, what is this? And he said, I have something to show you, come here. And so and walked to the window that looked out there, and out there in the middle of the lake was this tree up like this, and up in the top of the tree, swinging up there, was the camera. So we all went out to eat, and we went to this Spanish restaurant, the Spanish House restaurant, and it's not a very big restaurant, and they have a counter where you can sit at the counter on stools, or they have about three booths. Well, we went in, and the booths were full, and there were six of us. So there were four seats. The counter was divided in two, and there were four seats on one side and four on the other. Well, four of the seats were empty over here, and two of them over here. So my mother, or maybe there were five, I don't remember, but anyway, so the cars and my father and my sister sat down there. My mother and I sat up at the other end. Well, my mother sort of looks around like this, you know, see who's sitting, where people are sitting, how far along they are with their dinner. And she starts announcing really loudly. Down, she leans forward and calls down the counter like this. As soon as somebody's through, she says, we can move into their booth. The room is about as big as this, right? I said, Mother, Mother, shut up. People are trying to have their coffee. Shut up. Oh, she said, they're almost through. Don't worry about it. Just as soon as somebody's through, she says, we can have their
That's the way you can get it.
Finally, these more people came in. Were standing there waiting. There weren't any seats at the counter or in the booth. And so they were standing there. My mother looks over and she says, you know, Debbie, if we stood up and went and stood down by everybody else, these people could have our seats, and I know that these people are just about ready to leave. So we got up and went and stood behind everybody else. And my mother says to Margie again, these people are almost ready to leave. Oh, so they left. Poor little boy sitting behind said, well, you can have our table, he says, and they sort of get up and creep away, and we all sit down.
Well, now, what can you do in a public place like that just besides just eat?
Well, you eat and talk.
Can you talk?
Sure.
But what?
What to order?
We had a long discussion about espresso coffee. Both the cars are ordered. They lived down in Central America so much. They both speak Spanish. They were speaking Spanish to the waiters and waitresses. And they ordered their little coffee, and then they were talking about Cuban coffee isn't as bad for you as coffee that's made with green coffee beans. For some reason, they roast the coffee beans until they're black. So South American coffee is not. They make it strong. It looks like gasoline when you pour it out. It's so strong, but it's not. It doesn't have as much caffeine in as the coffee that's made from green beans.
Mrs. Carr?
Yeah, she's almost a little overpowering. She's quite a.
I know her personality, but I mean, is she really smart?
Well, I don't know, Guy. My mother.
You sat there with her. That's more than I ever did.
Well, I think she's smart.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's all I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she's pretty smart.
Mhm. Quick on her feet. You know, she thinks fast.
Yeah.
Quick on her feet.
Well, I heard Archie Carr lecture one time, and he's marvelous. And over at Walker Auditorium for the freshmen. And then I read one of those books of his, The Windward Road or something. And he's a traveler.
Mm.
He is a traveler.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't tell. I couldn't tell from reading that whether he was a scientist or a traveler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he.
He didn't. Uh, his the science didn't impede him, didn't stiffen him or anything.
That was a beautiful line.
Yes.
Like,
and he had a feeling for the talking people.
Yeah. That's right.
So he might be, he'd be fun to, he can talk.
Yeah, he can. And he was saying.
But he can't do it in a public.
He was saying that, he was saying that, that science today, he and my father were talking about biology and science today, and Archie Carr was saying that today so much of it is chemistry and cellular biology and biochemistry, and he said, you know, I'm not as interested in that. He said, I don't know that I'd be a biologist today if I had to do it today. He said, I'm more interested in animal species, in the whole organism and how it fits into thing. And he said one thing, there's a they're doing a campaign now, they're having an anti-drug week or something like that, and they've got signs up all over town. I haven't noticed them. He said they're in the Minute Mart, and it's a he thinks it's a nationally advertised campaign because they're nice posters. They have all these little bottles with pills and things in them, and then twined inside the pills, they have a snake. He said, you know what that snake is? He said, it's an indigo snake. He said, an indigo snake is the nicest snake that ever lived in Florida. He said, indigo snakes are so nice and so friendly, they'll come and crawl in your lap if you sit down. And he said, you know what else? Indigo snakes are the only snakes in Florida that are on the endangered list because they're so friendly that people have caught them for pets. And they are the only snake that's an endangered species in Florida. He said, now who the hell put it on that poster?
Uh-huh.
He said, that's just stupid because people are going to look at that and go out and kill indigo snakes.
Well, Debbie, you may get a little rest, maybe relief. You might get a little relief.
Is it too close?
No. Now, maybe you just open that door a little more.
Oh. Made a quick trick, Chip.
Yeah.
I always think that Miami is a whole day's ride.
It feels like it.
Uh-huh.
It feels like it.
Yes, sir.
Well, this is the first reporting we've done since you left.
Mm.
I guess it is, isn't it? Because you left on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
This is safe. And then Guy's been working.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, how did it look, Ray?
About as relaxed as I have ever seen my parents.
Oh. Well, that's
everything looks the same as ever.
Except twice as big. And you hit Fort Lauderdale and you go to Miami on a turnpike. It's apartment solid. All
okay,
the
I'm not interested in that.
Well, the house looks as plush as I have ever seen it. I just remark every time I go home. Getting a little plusher every time.
Oh, don't tell me.
The kids are out of the house now, and the expenses aren't so much, so they can spend money on things, and they come home one time, there's a new stove, wall-to-wall carpeting. This time, it was brand new carpet in the bedroom. See, this is the carpet they bought on sale. Allie, see, I had everything moved out of the bedroom. And had a pad put down and waited for the carpet Mom called Berta and said, "Now I want the check to make sure it's good, because see, it was a remnant sale." "Oh, it's fine, Mrs. Reynolds." They brought it out and it was so full of holes you couldn't put it down. But they said, "Come on back and pick up the carpet, anything you want." So she went out and picked out this beautiful, expensive piece of shag carpet and had it brought out and installed. This was after 2 days of having to crawl over the furniture all over the house and sleep in other rooms. And Dad thought it was so pretty, he won't let anybody wear their shoes in the bedroom. And he invites me to, "Come on, roll on the rug, roll on the rug. It's really nice and soft." So I got home and rolled on the rug a little while with my father. And they were right in the process of installing drapes. And my mother, they were, well, they went from ceiling to floor, and that's 8-foot ceilings in the house. And Mother made them by hand, which is a process that took her 2 weeks, and decided she had too many little hooks in it, so she had her neighbor come over, and they sat down that night and ripped out about 10 of the little hook places and then altered the whole thing while Dad and I put in the rods. And so they got the drapes up, and the room looked gigantic. I've never seen a room so tall.
Drapes did that?
Oh, yes. And the walls just suddenly looked bare. Mother looked at it all, and you know, she says, "I don't know if I like it. It makes the room dark." But she had these old curtains up there that she used to dye. She'd replace everybody's curtains, but it came to her room, she'd just dye her curtains again. So Dad was kidding her all week long. "Well, what are you going to dye now, Eva? There's nothing left to dye. What are you going to do with your curtains?" She threw them out. But Dad had just gotten back from, see, the company sponsors the fishing trip every year for the executives. And this year they split it up. You go golf or fishing. So he went out and played golf instead of going fishing, because people on the trip, fishing trip, usually drink all night and go out in the boat and are sick all day. He was a little wise about that. He knew they had to get up at 6, and if you played golf, you didn't have to get up till about 10. So he got about 5 days off, just relaxing in golf, which was great because the offices had been pretty rough. And he was in fine spirits when he got home. And he put on this t-shirt the company gave him. They were passing him out. These little thin cotton t-shirts, and it had Florida, 73, then it had Budman. That's a little Budweiser beer emblem. You see, when I grew up, my parents weren't exactly teetotalers, but my mother just didn't want anything alcoholic in the house. And so I walk home, and here's my father with his Budweiser shirt on, and I go, he says, "I got one for your mother, too." A little bit later comes Mom out with a Budman t-shirt on. Like, "Where's the camera? Where's the camera? I gotta have a picture." He says, "You know what? She's learned to make whiskey sours." I go, "Don't tell me." And she turns around to Dad and says, "Oh, by the way, Dick, did you know they had old Grandad on sale at the Foremost Liquor Place?" And I go, "Oh my God, she's following the liquor sale advertisements now. What's happened to my house?" He says, "Well, you know, I just found a little glass of wine now and then. It helps me go to sleep." And I just smile at her. Open the pantry door and there's this empty bottle, gallon bottle of Chianti wine.
Why, Rick?
The house is getting to look like one of these showrooms, and my parents are having beverages, cocktails, and having the neighbors over for the dinners and everything. The first night I'm home, she says, "We didn't mean, you know, I hope you don't mind, but we have guests in for dinner tonight." So the day was pretty much shot, getting the house ready for putting up drapes and getting the rug fixed and setting up the table and having guests over. I kind of had to wait till the next day before I could see my parents. The most peculiar situation.
This is a change.
Yeah. I haven't really had a chance to look at all of it, but I think this is the most fun I've had at home in a long time, because I can finally begin to see how my parents kid each other. I guess without anybody home, they have more time for themselves. Because we sat down for dinner. This was Sunday night. No, this was Monday night. And Mom had this nice dinner prepared. had London broil this sauce she makes, and of course after you finish, you know, the sauce spreads around your plate. And she said, well, now, don't eat too much, I've got to get ready for dessert, I've got some key lime pie.
Mm-hmm.
So Dad didn't say anything, he just gets up and he goes over to the kitchen sink and he washes his plate off, gets it all clean, and dries it off, and sits down, and straightens up around, he's got this shiny plate, see, and he just sits there like this. He looks just like a little kid. And Mother says, well, Dick, I didn't mean you have to go wash your plate. Look at him, Rick. He looks just like a little kid, doesn't he?
Uh-huh.
He doesn't say anything. He just looks and won't smile or anything. He just plays along with her. Well, you and me, Rick, we can just have clean plates. But I don't know. I guess I'll have to cut him a piece big enough so his plate won't look so big now, won't I?
Oh.
That is just the few times that I ever glimpsed how they kid each other and play around like that. And Dad will just keep serious about the whole thing and play along with her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
Maybe it was there all the time and you just didn't
mm-hmm.
see.
Never seen it. But I can't, I haven't put it all or looked at it all yet, so I can't talk about it too much.
You know, that's one of the
that
things.
Kind
of
cooked a little bit, I guess.
I can see what went on at that stage from these talks we're doing. I just transfer them. I know it's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way of addressing this.
Amazing. Well, we can save a few things for another night. I do know that the Neelands have Texas bonnets in the yard. All sorts of things. Yeah.
Well, give us just a little idea of what happened with the Neelands.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, I wrote it all down in a notebook, which is now sitting in Gainesville, so I'll have to get the notebook. Because my mind is not working. But anyway, their garden is blooming. I didn't stay too long. I didn't have too much time by the time I got there, so I was only there for a little less than an hour, I guess. And everything's blooming. They have California poppies, big gold poppies up and down, and they've got just flowers everywhere. Their hollyhocks have leaves like this, and I looked out the window and I said, Miss Neelan, you've got all those flowers out there. And she said, yes. We've been sitting in the house, and she'd been telling me about she's rewriting the bylaws for one of her groups. It's the hospital auxiliary. She's rewriting the bylaws because now they're taking men. She said, you know, it's such a problem. I have to change all the she's to he and she. She said, what I'm trying to do is just avoid it completely. Or put in the president. She said, I just think it's more trouble than it's worth to let men in. So I looked out the window and I saw all these flowers out there. So we went out in the garden and Mr. Neeland was out there. And all the poppies were blooming, and she said, oh, yes, these are the California poppies, the wildflowers. Oh, they're beautiful. They're dark gold, about this big. And then she said, you know what those are? And she pointed over, those blue flowers growing up. And I said, no. And she said, those are Texas bluebonnets, the state flower of Texas. And they just grow wild all over the road in Texas. And somebody gave some to a woman who lives just south of Ocala, and she put them out in an empty lot, and they just took over. And so Mr. Neeland heard about it and went down, or else she heard about him, one. And he went down and got some plants and put them in the yard, so they have a couple of little clumps of these Texas bluebonnets growing. Oh, they're pretty dark blue, and they're like a little cone that stands up. I've never seen them before. And then we walked on around, and the roses were blooming, and the sweet peas were just going crazy all over. They climbed all up and blooming. And we walked down the sidewalk, and between the sidewalk and the street in front of the house, there were all these little tiny pink flowers blooming. I looked, and they were on sort of scruffy-looking little plants, and I looked down, and I said, what's that? And she said, Scottish heather.
Well, thank you.
And it was. It's the heather from the Highlands in Scotland that they've got. They've got about six little plants growing there and blooming. And then we came on back around the edge of the house, and Mr. Nealon said, I have something to show you here. He said, this is range grass. This not the kind that he's got as a border, but
uh-huh.
There's a different kind of range grass that he's got growing. And he said, we keep this for the children because it grows up, and when it goes to seed, it makes a seed pod about this long. And when the seed pod, a skinny little seed pod, when the seed pod turns black, you pull it off, and it's got five little segments, five little sections in the bottom. And you take hold of each one, and you pull it down, and that's the seeds that you have hold of. And then you pull off part of the seed pod, and it makes a long, skinny, just a, like a little thorn that comes out like this. And you hold it in the light, and the thorn twirls around while you watch it, and it makes a little corkscrew to push the seed into the ground.
Uh-huh.
And he said, we keep them for the children, because the children come along, and they pull them off, and they play with them. And he said, I don't think there's one that's dark and that's black enough yet. But we'll try. And so we broke one off that wasn't quite ready yet, and I held it, and it corkscrewed. I could see it. It does it to the light. It's a photo. What do you call it? Light. It's light sensitive, and it does it in the light. And it corkscrewed about halfway, and then stopped. He said this week they'd probably be ripe, but he's got all these grasses growing. So their garden is really something to see right now. It's just beautiful. And then Mr. Nealon was, while we were sitting there, he had this little ice cream container in his hands. He said, I've been feeding my chickens. And I said, well, you've been doing what? I didn't know you had chickens. And he pointed out in the road, and it was about 4 o'clock, 4:30, I guess. He was feeding his doves. You know, Ms. Nealon and he both have talked about his morning doves that he feeds. Well, they were all over the road.
You saw them.
I saw them. Yeah, they were all out there eating. And he said that I have to watch or else the town pigeons will come in and eat their food. And so I have to sort of watch. And this car came down while we were standing there and just rode right into them and scattered them all. And he said, look at that. They don't even look. They don't even see those birds there. And the birds all came back and settled down. And Ms. Nealon said, yeah, there are two of them that are nesting. And they come early. They come before the other birds. She said, we always watch for them. And we run out and we give them something. And they eat it and go back to their nest. And then at 4:30, he goes out and feeds all the rest of them. There's something.
Now, they are morning doves.
Mm-hmm, the big doves.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen so many. I've never seen more than two morning doves.
I have never.
At a time.
You hear them and you see a few, but nothing.
I've never seen. There were about 15 there.
Debbie, I haven't heard you complain about your head not being clear.
Oh, it just was muddled this morning.
Just this morning?
Yeah, I just didn't type very much. It's just muddled.
You slept too much.
That's it. I slept too much.
Well, now that's the first complaint I've heard like that.
Sleeping too much?
No, your head been muddled.
Oh.
Now, I have that complaint all the time.
Well, one other thing that I did this weekend was they had a kitty matinee of the yearling, so we went to see it. See if we'd notice, recognize any of the stuff. My mother was so excited. She said, oh, this is the best movie. She said, this is the best movie. I just love this movie. It's 20 years old. It's really sweet. I cried all the way through it. But it's got fake sunsets and painted scenery and everything. It's so corny. It really is. It's got all these sunsets and Jody and the fawn go running under the live oak trees and we're all sitting there in a row going so my mother walked out and she said, well, she says, I guess you can see what we thought passed for movies 20 years ago. Oh,
your mother
Mother used to read that to you. She used to read us the Yearling. We read it over and over and over and over again when we were little. And to this day, I can read the last page of the Yearling and start crying. It just tears me apart. And my mother used to, we'd all cry. I think it's a sort of familial response, because we'd all sit around and cry at the last page. There's three children sitting in a row, and my mother bawling, and the three of us bawling at the end of this book. Well, one time, Lydia Bigelow called my mother. Just as mother had finished reading the Yearling to us, we were all just sobbing, and my mother answered the phone, "Hello, Lydia." And Lydia said, Katie, what's wrong? Oh, she says, I've just been reading the Yearling to the children. And Lydia says, oh, I understand. She says, I'll call you back in an hour.
Oh, dear.
It was the same every time you read it.
It was the same every time we read it. And it, one thing I noticed in the movie, though, I don't know whether she had a deluxe edition printed of the book, but the edition that we have has really beautiful illustrations done by C.W. Wise, or I don't remember, who, that's not the right name. But they took the illustrations from that book and used the same setup in the movie. Like when Kenny sits and talks about the bear hunt, he's got all the foresters down beside him, and in the book there's that picture, and in the movie they use the same thing. Kenny's sitting up there, and they people, and when Fodderwing dies, there's a picture in the book of them carrying the little coffin up to bury him, and it's the same thing in the movie. So, yeah.
Well, sir, the rain has stopped. Almost.
Their exposure is still limited. Except when they go out as sitting ducks.
Make things happen.
Well, no, I didn't say that. I said that the exposure was limited.
Yeah.
It wasn't sustained. wasn't prolonged.
Yeah.
It's just dip in, dip out.
Mm-hmm.
It's still. They don't stay all day. They still just stay a little while. Or a week. Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It ought to just go on and on, you see. With fresh subjects. Just doesn't matter who. Now, this neighbor that Phyllis's that has the cows up at Waldo.
Yeah, what was it? Yes.
Fisher?
I believe her name was Fisher.
D. Fisher.
D. Fisher, you're right, Nick.
Well, see, that's just made to order. She's a cattlewoman. All she ever did. She used to make a living at it. Well, now you can go with her, I imagine, almost any time. I think she'd like to have company, wouldn't she?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go, too. Now you kind of got to look ahead now with your strategy. See, I'm out of this. I've quit this. But you just starting. You all. And you see, there's a great deal you have to know. Now, like I put in the first year, so I before I really took hold out here, I had this little. I tried talking outdoors on the wing, and never did work. I had that little old Sony thing, and it never took anything. I never got anything that you could just barely hear. And I never got much talk. It's got to be control. You have to have more control than that. I had to. And I never actually got good talk until we came in here in the kitchen. And that all came, let's see, the first year, that was the third year. It took me 3 years to work up to it. And that's when I began to learn. Well, you learn all the time. Then the next year, you see, after that August the 15th, I was at the office, and I was trying to get a toll up there. And then I could see the office from this point of view, and